Welcome to the Project Community. Thank you for joining us. So if you've been here in the past couple of weeks, we are doing an in-depth dive on what's called the Lord's Prayer. Now, probably a lot of us have seen in-depth dives on the Lord's Prayer, but we're taking it line by line, because if there was anything Jesus meant intentionally, it is this prayer. He's like, hi, I'm God. If you're going to talk to God, do it in this way. You know, if you're a white-tailed deer, your ears perk up at that. Like, okay, yeah, this is how you want me to talk to you, how you want me to talk to the Father. Okay, we're listening up. Last week, Matt and Carrie shared the purpose of the line, let your kingdom come, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's the version we're used to hearing. It's sometimes the King James Version, but certainly the New American Standard. And what we covered was this line represents an opportunity that is reminiscent of the opportunity that we lost in the garden. Not my will, but your will. We had the opportunity in the garden and we messed it up. Not what I want, but what you want. It means giving up what you want to grow closer to someone. Anybody watched a TV show that you really hate, but somebody you loved liked it? I use that analogy all the time. Like, you know, okay, you have the two trees in the Bible, but more accurate modern day is like, I hate this show, but I love you. So you're literally giving up something you want because you want to be closer to another person. You want to spend time with another person. Less extreme with the TV analogy than the trees, but it's the same concept. Valuing someone apart from yourself and elevating them above your own ambition in your own mind. I can't stress that. It's all in your head, but that's important because that defines what your actions are. Now, this week, we're going to be covering the next line. Yeah, just the next line of the prayer. Get to that here in a second. Disclaimer, the Bible Project did a lot of the heavy lifting on this one. I do not have time to study Hebrew for 7 years and also ancient Mediterranean history for 7 years to get the expertise on this, so I simply trusted an expert on it. If you haven't heard of the Bible Project, find them on YouTube. If you aren't proven wrong about some concept you had about the Bible, 3 videos in, I have failed at my job. They are amazing. So, let's just start off with the full prayer as it is translated. Got this from Bible Project, but literally translated from Hebrew, Luke 11:2-4. Our Father, who is in the skies, may your name be recognized as holy. May your kingdom come, may your will be done, as it is in the skies, so also on the land. So think of that Canaanite fishbowl cosmology there. Our daily provision of bread, give it to us today. And forgive us our debts, just as we have also forgiven those indebted to us. And don't lead us to be tested, but deliver us from the evil one. Amen. So that is a literal translation from Hebrew, or not Hebrew, Greek. It was spoken in Sumerian, and then written down in Greek. But the next line that we're going to be covering today is often translated into English as, give us this day our daily bread. Sometimes with a comma, sometimes without a comma. But so first things first. Yes, I could do a full sermon off of just one single line. I go that hard. I read way too far into stuff, just ask my wife. I will go on and on about the smallest things. So yeah, I can fill the time with just this one single line. But it's that awesome. But if you notice, the first half of the prayer, our Father who is in the skies, be recognized as holy. May your kingdom come. May your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's the first half of the prayer, and it's focused on God. The first statement, it states God's station. It's a reminder of his reputation. And repeating this prayer reminds us of the love and might that this entity has for us. The love and might that God has given us, and it reminds us why we should trust him. Father in the skies, be recognized as holy. His name is famous. He's that high up, but he's still interested in you. That's a reminder to us. The next line, it states, it's a submission of will to God. It's trusting his intent, his intention, and repeating this line reminds us of his intentions, and it gives us an opportunity to draw closer to him by giving up our own way for his way. May your kingdom come. May your will be done. The next verse shifts the focus onto us. It's no longer talking about God. It's talking about us. And it starts with our daily provision of bread. Give it to us today. So that's the first line that focuses on us. Before I get into it, I want to first talk about how it sounds. Because when you hear, give us this day our daily bread, depending upon who you are, you're going to hear something different. So growing up, my mind viewed this in a variety of ways. Largely depended upon my mindset at the time of reading it, or even the time of considering it. The first way I remember that I regarded this verse was to think of it as a simple throwaway line. Like a literal, you know, people ask God for stuff all the time. And it's almost like it's saying, hey, don't forget to ask, you know, don't eat and forget to ask. It's rude not to ask, you know, don't forget to include God. You know, he might feel left out. You know, you might need to pick him for dodgeball. You know, don't leave him out. It's a throwaway line. Just, you know, recognize God, let you have bread. And I just moved on. The second way that I learned to regard it was kind of a gimme attitude. Because, you know, gimme bread, literally. So this is my understanding of it was like, okay, we go through the prayer. This is the part of the prayer where you ask for stuff. This is the proper time for ask. Specifically, the third line, not before. I was actually trained growing up in church. I was actually trained and taught that it is forbidden to ask God for stuff unless you first call him holy and also ask for his will. Like you could be on fire or you could be actively being consumed by a dolphin, but it was rude to ask God for help from the fire or the dolphin unless you first called him holy and asked for his will. Like, I actually believed that growing up, you know, always, you know, call him holy and ask for his will and then ask for help. Otherwise, it is rude and he will smite you. You want to be smitten? No Moana fans? Okay. The focus that I was given at this time, the focus that I was taught is the order of the prayer, not the content. Don't do that, by the way. Now, the next way I regarded it was, growing up in a mindset of, you know, don't be rude or God will smite you. He wants to smite you. He wants to smite you. Any excuse to smite you, you're getting smit. And that was the mindset I had. So the third way I regarded it was like a form of begging, humbly and fearfully asking for a meager meal of bread so as not to offend this angry God who was ever so furious to hear you ask for anything more than bread. I actually thought at one point that's what this verse was for. It was to beat you down. Like, you know, I just kind of envision, you know, the knaves, like a Monty Python style knave. Where's a potato sack and a bowling ball cleaner for a hat? You know, oh, please, Lord, don't starve me. I'm a poor wretch who should despise myself. Please, a crumb of bread, please. That's how I regarded it, because I just had this mindset of, God's angry, ask for more than bread, he's going to get you. Be a knave. Put on your potato sack, make sure it's clean. But after attaining a more mature mindset and understanding of the wholesome and trusting nature of the first two lines, I realized that this same nature continues in the third line. It shifts focus from God to you, but it's still that same understanding. He's your father. He's mighty. He's interested in you. His will is double good for you, what it could ever be for him. It's in your interest. God's interest in you does not turn off at the third line. It continues. This is the closest I came to the truth by myself, but The way the line itself is framed originally turns it into so much more. So let's get into the construction of it. So, excuse me. Let's look at the literal speech in the original Greek writing. Okay? It was originally spoken by Jesus in ancient Sumerian, but it was written down in Greek. So, the literal translation in Greek, the bread of us this day, give it to us today. Now, there's a bit of interpolation. You can also say, the bread of us this day, give it to us this day. Hearing it that way, you start to understand the emphasis on this day. But this line, it emphasizes three specific things. Naturally, there's an emphasis on bread. It is the bread that we need to survive. The focus is what is needed by you in order to live. Bread of us in Greek literally means the bread that you are owed. The bread of us, the bread that is owed to us. Now, it's not owed in debt. It's owed in survival. Bread of us, that context was, if somebody wants you to live, if somebody is invested in your survival, they owe you that bread. It's not an O of debt. It's an O of interest and investment. The amount that I need to live, that's the context. It refers to provision, but more on that in a bit. Sorry, I do that. I'll introduce you to something, but it all comes together later, so I have to keep it secretive. But wait, there's more. More bread and quail. So the second emphasis is on, naturally, giving. It's not asking fearfully or greedily. It is simply expecting something to be given. Think of it like this, as in, you've already agreed to give. This is when I prefer you to give it. Or that gift that you said you had for me, if you could deliver it around this time, that would be great. So think of it like, okay, somebody missed your birthday, they told you, I have your gift, and now you're working on a time for them to swing by your house and drop it off. Now, you're not fearfully waiting for that gift. You're not greedily waiting. Well, you may be. I don't know. I don't know who you are, what you got going on, but you may be greedily waiting for that gift. Shame on you. But you're not fearfully or greedily waiting for the gift. It's simply, somebody said they had a gift for me. I expect them to give it to me. Why? Because we tight. Why? They said they had a gift for me. Why would you say, I have a gift, and then not give it? It's simply expecting the gift that was promised to be given. It's very simple. It's trusting. You have no doubt it's coming. Simply arranging a time frame for what is already promised. But notice that time frame is today. So it's bread, what you need to survive. The gift is expected, as matter-of-factly, but that emphasis on today is the third emphasis, and it is the strongest one. The bread of this day, the gift of this day, the heaviest emphasis in the entire verse is the concept of today. Why? If you're reading something written by an ancient Hebrew and they say something twice, it means something. It's not just, oh, hey, they really meant it. No. If they really mean it, they do a statement restatement. But if they mention it twice in the same sentence, that is, there's something deeper. So the emphasis is on today. Why does it use the bread as a reference for provision? Why not, oranges or fish? They talked about fish a lot. Why not simple grain? Why is the emphasis on bread as a reference of provision? Why is the idea of giving expected so readily as if it was already a done deal? No fear, no anger, no greed. It's just, we know it's going to be given. Why is today emphasized so hard and all in just one line of the verse? Now, believe it or not, that was not the deep dive. That was, anybody, Mr. Bean fans? Yeah, that was not the high dive where Mr. Bean, you know, just locks it up and, you know, blasters himself to the floor. No, that was the first diving board. That was about 15 foot. We're going to the 30 foot now. This is the deep dive. So let's look and just start with the today concept, the heaviest emphasis. The actual Greek word used by the disciples every time they wrote down this prayer in the Gospels, the actual Greek word is epiousios. Does anybody need help spelling it? Tristan shot his hand up for a second. I know your mom has it written down. E-P-I-O-U-S-I-O-S. Is it behind me? Epiousios, Greek. So epiousios, it is a compound word. Greeks like compound words, and so does English. It is a remarkably specific word. How remarkable, you ask? Because that's how you sound like. It is so specific, in fact, that in all of Greek literature written before the Dark Ages, it is only ever written down in this prayer. Spoken, sure, but it was never written down in the ancient world before this prayer or after this prayer. This is the only written record of the word. We knew it existed, but nobody wrote it down except the disciples. Now, as I said, Jesus spoke this prayer in Aramaic, but they recorded it in Greek. Most likely because of their proximity to so many Greeks at that time around Capernaum. But the disciples decided that this word was the best representation of what Jesus originally said. It is the only, I can't emphasize it, that it's the only time this word was written down in all of the ancient world, like before the Dark Ages, Rome and backward. So either the intent behind this word was so important that they dug up some ultra rare word just to explain what Jesus was getting at, or the intent behind this word was so important that they created a compound Greek word just to do the concept justice. In either case, it was, in their opinion, really, really important to use this word and to get this meaning right. The compound nature of this word breaks down into the phrase is upon existence. Epe on the usios, existence. Upon existence. And what it meant, or what it was understood as to Greek speakers when it was spoken, was upon this moment's existence. Right now. Just this moment. Like, just right now. That snap, it's in the past. It's not even upon this existence anymore. They meant this very plonk second, right now. So if you put it together with the original verse as it was written, the bread of us upon this moment's existence, give it to us upon this moment's existence. And with the context in there, it means the bread of us that is needed for this moment's existence, give it to us upon this moment's existence. Confused yet? But are you catching the meaning of the emphasis, though? It's not today. It's right now. And then again. And then again. And then again. But what is so glaringly absent from this verse's context? It has no concept of future. Don't give me the bread of this afternoon. Give me the bread of this moment's existence. Not the next moment, this one. There's no storehouses. There's no hoarding. There's no schemes. There's no keeping it for later just in case. There's no taking it from somebody else. God has me covered right now without delay. There is no delay. There is no wait. Only his intent. It doesn't refer to tomorrow. It doesn't put it in a recurring meal order or menu item. It gets as close to this single solitary moment, single picosecond, single plonk second as possible. The smallest possible unit of time indicating right now, this moment's existence, this moment, no further. Don't provide for me in the next moment. Provide for me in this moment. So why the emphasis on this very moment? What does this verse have against the future? Why doesn't it like the future? Does it have something against planning for the future? Well, to answer that, let's look at the bread bit. So, I told you I was going to get back to the provision. Can you think of another time in the Bible where God provided bread only for a day? Go ahead. Moses in the desert. Only Moses ate, nobody else. I'm joking. Sprouted bugs and stuff. I love it. Yes, you are correct. Manna from heaven. That is Exodus chapter 16, verses 4 through 7. The Lord said to Moses, "Behold, and I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, so that I may test them." There's a grade. Whether or not that they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. God was really big on taking a break on the weekend. Otherwise, humans work themselves to death. And yes, we do. I'm so guilty of that. So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, "At evening you will know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord. For he hears your grumblings against the Lord. And what are we that you grumble against us?" So each day they were to gather a day's portion of bread and not save any until morning. As Colby said, situation is they just made it out of Egypt. They only pack sparse supplies. They do not have enough food to feed an entire nation of people in the desert. So God provides for them. But they're not supposed to save any until the morning. Guess what they did? Verses 19 through 21. And Moses said to them, "No one is to leave any until morning." But they did not listen to Moses, and some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and stank. I hate it when that happens. And Moses was angry with them. They gathered it morning by morning, and everyone as much as he would eat. But when the sun came hot, it would melt. So, like I said, it popped out bugs and stank if they kept it until morning. Now, pop quiz. Did they keep a day's worth? No. Did they hoard some for later? Yes. Is that a passing grade? No. So why, if God's going to provide you fresh each morning, something new, why would you keep the stale stuff for later? They didn't trust God. They lived in fear. They didn't think he would provide as he already had done. They gathered for themselves, for their own interest, and these would be the people who stocked up on toilet paper in 2022. I'm just saying. So why did God not want them to keep sustenance for 2 days, except for the weekend? Well, they needed to rely on him for their needs and not themselves. So it's just why? Is there anything wrong with looking after yourself? Well, when you trust in your own stockpiling of resources, that gives you the idea that said resources can become scarce. And if you believe in the scarcity of resources, you now believe that you may need to choose yourself over others in the attainment of said resources. Congratulations, you've now convinced yourself of necessary evil. You've now convinced yourself that in a post-apocalyptic scenario, it's okay to end somebody else if you think the water's not plentiful. It makes sense under natural selection. It does not make sense under an all-loving God. But if the Israelites relied on God already, they would have believed that there's no need to take extra. at the expense of others because God would continue to provide. It happened each morning because scarcity is an illusion if you're in God's camp. All things were made by God. From what we perceive as nothing, all things were made, and thus, he could always provide more from nothing. With God in your camp, why would you keep for yourself? Why would you not give as he gives because you expect him to give more? Has he taught you nothing? If God, I'm going to repeat myself several times because this, you know, I'm not as good as the ancient Hebrews are on emphasis, so I just repeat it. I'm an American. But if God can create a universe from nothing, how much more can he provide for you from nothing? So bringing it all together, the bread of us that is needed for this moment's existence, give it to us upon this moment's existence. God does not want us to trust him to keep us alive day to day. He wants us to trust him to keep us alive moment by moment. The verse is a statement of complete faith in God's intention and also complete trust in God's capability. So this line in our English, I myself would phrase it as this. Sustain my life with your power each and every moment, and don't give me any more than what I need right now, because I expect you to give me more in the very next moment. Don't give me more than what I need right now, because you're going to be with me and for me in the next moment. You're already in the next moment. Why do I need any more than what I need right now? Now, if you're like me, this presents a problem. I am a planner. I am a saver. I'm, you know, borderline doomsday prepper. I like to be prepared. It's my personality. We did a whole test and everything. It's my flaw. I like to make plans and provisions. So does this verse mean it's bad to make plans? Is it bad to have a savings account? And also, if you like to be really critical, like critical Bible thinkers, you read something and then you look for something that appears to contradict it because you want to know what it really means, because they will work together. Isn't there something in the book of Proverbs that says, don't be a slugger, work today and store up today for the off season? Yes, there is. But the thing is, it's not bad to make plans because everybody's moment is different. The Greek language has very specific units of time. I mean, they pull off trigonometry and everything. So they have very specific numbers and measurements, but this was moment. It's ambiguous. Everybody's moment is different. A fisherman only knows what his income is going to be when the daily catch comes in and not before. A fisherman's moment is a day. Give me my daily bread for today. Give me the income I need for today, because they're not going to know until they bring it in for the day. A farmer doesn't know if the crop will be good until the harvest. At the end of a full season is the only time they know. So that moment is a year. It takes a year for them to realize God's provision for them. A business entrepreneur, I'm getting into the weeds with this one, say that there's a business entrepreneur who makes a particular plastic widget, a plastic product, and it has an expiration date every 7 years. Well, after that 7 years, it's going to need replacement, so this entrepreneur would be waiting 7 years to see if there was another surge in orders to replace the ones that expired. That moment would be 7 years. So the point is, whatever your interval of income is, Don't expect a God who speaks universes into existence to be stingy. Whatever your moment is, whatever manna you happen to be harvesting, whatever that looks like, trust that the manna will be there in the morning, whenever that morning is. However long you have to wait until the next morning, trust that the manna will be there in the morning. Don't look to take from others because you don't trust God to give to you. Give to them as he gives to you. Be a conduit. Who here remembers the parable of the tenants? Yeah, I expect you to, Kobe. So the parable of the tenants. The one who was given much was faithful with much and turned it into more. So if God gives you something and you transmit that blessing, if you pass it on to others, well, here, let me backtrack a bit. What's the only thing in the Bible where God invites you to test him on? I'm doing a lot of quizzes today. It says, do not test the Lord your God. But he says, give unto me, and I will give you 10 times more. Is that a get-rich-quick scheme? No. How do you give to God? He already owns everything. How do you give to him? What you do unto the least of these, you do to me. So if you give to people, you're giving to God, and he will give you more. Why does he give you more? Because he expects you to continue giving. I give you one talent, you give half of that away. So I give you two talents, you give one whole talent away. So I give you four talents, so you give two whole talents away. The more you give, the more he's going to give you because he knows he can trust you to act like him and give. Don't take from others because you don't expect God to give to you. Give to others because you expect him to give you even more and live off the excess. Now, you will have to go get that manna. You will have to go work. But in the meantime, focus on your neighbor because that manna will be there the next time around. He is faithful. Now, before I close, I'll just read it one more time. Sustain my life with your power each and every moment, and don't give me any more than what I need right now. Because I expect you to give me more tomorrow. Looking at now, I would have said, expect you to give me more in the next moment, to follow my own emphasis, but we'll let it stand. So, yeah. So in closing, I just want us to keep in mind, just look for the blind spots in your own life. Look for the ways in which you might not trust. Look for the things that you might not turn loose of and help other people with. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, I'm not going to lend my tools to somebody. I gave him my favorite bright orange dead blow hammer once. It came back with the head missing and there was, you know, teeth marks on it because they had a dog. It may be giving to people with your time, your work, sweat of your brow that you're not getting paid for. It may be as easy, I say easy, you know, in the context of what I'm about to say. It may be as easy as lending an ear. Whether or not you feel adequate, it may be as easy as lending an ear. Just listening. And if you don't have something to say, just listening is enough in a lot of cases. Something that we are very apt to try and keep for ourselves is time. You know, I have to cut this conversation short with a person because I don't have time. Or I got work to do, so I can't spend time with my family. Just don't be stingy. In everything, in every moment, expect that God is waiting in the next moment. I mean, if you're alive right now, he's already provided right now. So it's more along the lines of trust him to be there in the next moment. And if you find yourself in a destitute situation, don't let that beat you down so much that you cannot help somebody else right now. I know what Christy has in store for the kids' lesson. I kind of wish I included it right here. But we can post it online. Well, I don't have dude's name. What's dude's name? Oshmoger? George Mueller. Okay, I kind of like Oshmoger better, but we'll run with it. I guess we'll stick with reality, but George Mueller. Well, we'll post about it online. I don't want to ruin the kids' lesson. But kids, you get to know something the adults don't know because we're saving it for your lesson. It's really good and pertinent to this. But all right, if you would bow with me, I'm going to close this out. So, Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for this moment. Thank you for preparing this where we would have electricity, we would have breakfast, we would have air conditioning, plentiful light. And thank you for this space and the inexplicable way you provided it for us. And we thank you for this space and how it is actively letting us help this community, that is actively letting us coordinate provision for places that might go otherwise unnoticed. And just thank you for letting us use this space to reach out to other people. Now, Lord, the greatest way we can trust in your provision is to lean into you. I know not how else to phrase it, but Lord, please teach us to trust you in this moment by leaning into you. Help us to pray, help us to sing, and help us to read the scriptures, even if we think that we cannot possibly understand it. Help us to lean into the scriptures. And if we're confused, find someone to talk it over with us. And if we're confused, nothing else, go to a resource from a Bible group on YouTube or any other teaching provision. Just help us to lean into you such that you can change us, such that we recognize your sacrifice and how very much we mean to you. Help us to lean into that, to give ourselves to it, and to trust you moment after moment to change us into what you want us to be and ultimately who we want to be. In Jesus' name, we pray. Amen.